Hi, I'm Dr. Edward Anderson, and this is NOLA Art House Music Presents. Each program, we will introduce you to emerging musicians and music industry leaders representing the very best of the New Orleans creative arts community. We will speak with them musician to musician, providing you with an insightful and fascinating look into their inspiration, artistic vision, and the challenges they face as they strive to build successful careers, pushing their art and thus the great legacy of New Orleans music into the 21st century. The clarinet, an instrument of immense lyrical and expressive ability. Listen to this 1950s recording of the Duke Ellington Orchestra performing Duet, featuring the masterful clarinetist Jimmy Hamilton. Fast forward to the 21st century, a digitalized, media-driven world where radio, television, laptops, and smartphones promote that the bigger, louder, and more sensationalized the music, the better. So in a world where young aspiring artists are more likely to want to sound like this, or perhaps like this. What then would make a musician in his 20s enthusiastically choose to sound like this? No, this is not the remastered classic recording of a bygone jazz legend, nor is it the recent recording from a living elder statesman of jazz. This rendition of Rose Room, a classic from the swing band era, can be found on the recently released debut recording of 25-year-old New Orleans clarinetist Gregory Ajid. I took the opportunity to sit down and talk with Gregory about his love for the clarinet and his musical journey that has led him to this pivotal moment as a performing artist. Now, what makes Gregory's story as one of New Orleans' next generation jazz greats perhaps a bit more unique than the next is that his introduction to music actually had very little to do with jazz, or the birthplace of jazz. You see, Gregory was born in San Antonio, Texas, and spent most of his childhood in Honolulu, Hawaii, not exactly known as a hotbed of jazz culture. Here he talks about his formative years and moving to New Orleans as a young tween.
I had started playing clarinet in Hawaii in fifth grade band, and, you know, I kind of hated it, to be perfectly honest. And I really hated it moving to New Orleans because the particular school that I went to, like, I remember all the kids made fun of me because I was in band and all this kind of stuff. And I was, like, the only one in seventh grade who was in band. I mean, I feel like I moved here at the perfect time. I was 12 years old when I first moved to New Orleans, so I was still, you know, I was still young enough to, like, where people didn't even know that I wasn't from here. You know, like, I was here in middle school and everything like that. But I had the great fortune of going to this jazz camp, Louis Armstrong Jazz Camp. And, you know, I got to study with, like, Kid Jordan, Kent Jordan, Marlon Jordan, Alvin Batiste, Clyde Kerr, Alvin Fielder, like, you know, a bunch of, like, just, like, really, really heavy dudes. And to meet them when you're 13 years old, that's like, what?
Although Greg's new release contains selections that reference and pay tribute to the past, many selections, including the title track Mystery Blues, highlight his extraordinary technical facility and an authoritative grasp of modern harmonic vocabulary, suggesting he is a modernist at heart. Here Greg explains how both an open mind and open ears provided him with an epiphany moment from a notable modern jazz saxophonist.
You know, the first recording that I like jazz recording that I ever like listened to, and like my mouth just like my jaw dropped and my eyes got all big, and I just like remember, like, you know, like I remember the moment it happened. And it was a Sonny Stitt recording with the Oscar Peterson Trio. And he plays Au Privé, and I was at the Noka Library, the high school I went to. I was skipping class, and I would like I put the headphones on and I double clicked on the MP3 on the desktop, and I just remember like the Oscar Peterson playing his piano intro, and then all of a sudden Sonny Stitt comes up with the melody, and it's like, man, it's super like fast, killing. And I was like, what is this? And I was like, I want to play like this. And I was like, but I play clarinet. Like, no, I want to play like that. And, you know, in the same way, like the saxophone, like, I mean, the saxophone has such a, like a much larger history and like a much like, you know, there's so many more people that have played the instrument and so many more like notable sounds. Like, you know, I can listen, you know, you can hear Sonny Rollins, Dexter Gordon, all this kind of stuff. But with clarinet players, there's, you know, there to me, it's not the same. And I mean, there are plenty of clarinet players, but it's not to the same extent like there are saxophone players, you know. And I feel like the clarinet was like there was just so much more room and so much more space for me to have my own voice and to feel free and not boxed in by someone else's sound. And as I got older, you know, I started becoming more familiar with like things like Duke Ellington, you know, Jimmy Hamilton. I mean, I love Jimmy Hamilton so much, man. Like his sound on the clarinet is just like the sweetest, like his lines. I mean, like I love listening to Jimmy Hamilton. I mean, you know, I started playing with Delfio Marcellus, and that kind of forced me to listen to like kind of go outside of the box of stuff. And, you know, I became more familiar with like Barney Bagard, Jimmy Hamilton, cats like
the Duke Ellington School.
Yeah, the Duke Ellington School. And like, you know, the clarinet kind of like slowly began to open up to me. Like then I started checking out, like really checking out Sidney Bechet and other guys. And then I realized like the clarinet was like this, like, I mean, there's like a whole history of like just different sounds, different timbres, different tones, different approaches. But in the same way, I feel like the mainstream doesn't know about it. You know, like, because they don't teach clarinet in school. I'm sort of like where I come from, like, you know, I was playing clarinet and I was like, man, this instrument is so beautiful. Like, you can do anything on it. And I was like, man, why can't the clarinet be like that front man instrument? Why can't someone like have the notoriety like, you know, Miles Davis or John Coltrane or something like that? And, you know, I came to the conclusion that it's too hard for most people to play.
So which musician does Gregory consider to be his greatest musical influence?
I mean, you know, musician-wise, I mean, really my biggest influence is really Alvin Batiste.
Alvin Batiste, now deceased, this master avant-garde jazz clarinetist, composer, and music educator helped to pioneer the New Orleans modern jazz movement of the 1950s and 60s. Affectionately called Mr. Bat or Bat by his pupils and musical peers, his career as a musical educator spanned several decades and impacted generations of developing professional musicians. A list of notable past students includes saxophonist Branford Marsalis, Donald Harrison, pianist Henry Butler, and bassist, producer, and American Idol judge Randy Jackson, amongst many others.
I had the great fortune of meeting Alvin Batiste the year after I moved to New Orleans, and that like really changed my life. Like, you know, he was, you know, maybe the first year I met him, I didn't really fully understand like his greatness and his power and everything like that. But, you know, maybe the second year, the second summer with him kind of totally changed my life. Yeah, it was one of those things, like, you know, I met him at such a young age that, you know, at first I didn't fully understand like the magnitude of how, like what the experience that I was like having with him, like what it really was. And, you know, as I got older, I started realizing like how special and how lucky I was to get to spend time with someone like Alvin Batiste. And, you know, even now I think about it all the time, like, man, you know, like my life would be so different had I not met him.
So what was it about him?
You know, I feel like up until that point, I had met so many teachers that just like would like to tell you what to do. And Alvin Batiste was one of those guys, like, you know, if you didn't practice, he wouldn't get mad at you or anything like that. But he taught by example. And, you know, he was practicing all the time. Like, if he wasn't in class, he would be in his office practicing.
Yeah, I've seen him do that.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, he lived, you know, I feel like he was, like, a good person. You know, he didn't have to tell you what to do because he showed you what to do all the time. Yeah. And so it was like, man, like, after a while, I was like, man, I want to be like him.
Attending a high school conservatory was quite a commitment for Gregory. The first half of his day involved core instruction at a traditional high school. During lunch, he would then trek across town to Noka, where he would begin his instruction under Mr. Baptiste, surrounded by a host of extraordinarily talented classmates. Gregory gives a great deal of credit to the environment created by his peers at Noka. Here he discusses the upside of being surrounded by incredible classmate talents, such as trombone Shorty and trumpeter Christian Scott, both now Grammy-nominated artists, as well as internationally acclaimed piano prodigy Jonathan Baptiste, who is current artistic director at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, New York.
Noka is kind of a reflection of New Orleans. Like, it's a mini New Orleans scene. And, you know, there was competition. There was camaraderie. There were all those things there. You know, I remember being at Noka, and my last class was at, like, 4:30. And I remember there was, like, a class from 4:30 to 5 with Jonathan Baptiste, Trombone Shorty, like, all those guys. And, you know, my mom didn't pick me up until 6, and I would go into the classroom and just sit there with, like, my mouth, like, oh, those guys sound, I mean, they sounded like professionals. You know what I mean? Like, they were, like, doing records, they were playing gigs and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, man, like, I'm in high school listening to this. Like, you know, back then it was like, man, it was so cool to, like, to have people like that to, like, see and, like, to be so close to. And, like, the cool thing also is that, like, you know, like, I feel like there's, like, It was great to see them in that environment because I also saw how hard they worked. And someone like Jonathan Baptiste, like, there was never a moment that he was, like, away from... If he was away from a piano, he was singing or something like that. I mean, he was always shedding, you know?
He was music, right?
He was music. And it's like, you know, seeing something like that, like, you know, it took away the magic of what they did. I mean, what they do was magical, don't get me wrong. But I also got to see how hard they worked.
As Gregory and the musicians of his generation begin to take center stage, defining how 21st century music will sound and be remembered, I asked him for his thoughts regarding passing New Orleans musical culture onto the future generations that will follow him.
New Orleans is one of the few places that has, like, a very, very strong cultural tradition, especially in the United States. And I feel like the older generation of musicians understand how important it is to pass that from generation to generation. And it's not necessarily, like, you know, it doesn't mean that if you're not from New Orleans, you can't be part of that tradition or anything like that. But, you know, I see the way, like, we teach, like, younger children now. And it's, like, it's you can see, like, the passing of the torch, like, generation to generation. Like, I remember I was at jazz camp one day, and Clyde Kerr was teaching, and Nicholas Payton was also teaching at the camp.
The great trumpet.
Yeah.
He was my trumpet teacher, by the way.
And I just remember, like, the two of them were in the room shedding. And at one point, I was like, man, I couldn't tell who was playing or anything. And I was like, man, like, it was amazing to see, just for me to see, like, how Clyde Kerr had, like, passed on everything about him to Nicholas Payton. And then it's like, then it goes on to someone else. And it's like, you know, that's the importance of New Orleans.
I'd like to thank Gregory for sharing this insightful look into his music and his musical life. Gregory Ajeed's new release, Mystery Blues, can be found on iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. If you want to see and hear Gregory perform, visit gregoryajeed.com to check his schedule. That's Gregory Ajeed, A-G-I-D, all one word, .com. When he's in town, you can see him most Tuesdays with his quartet at the Maison, or Wednesdays with the Delphio Marcellus Uptown Jazz Orchestra at Snug Harbor, both located on Frenchman Street. To rehear this broadcast, please visit wwno.org